Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 2nd of March, 2016, and today we're talking to John W. Whitehead, the founder of the Rutherford Institute at Rutherford.org, a nonprofit civil liberties organization based in Charlottesville, Virginia, that was founded in 1982. And John Whitehead also is, in addition to being an attorney and an author of such books as Battlefield America, The War on the American People, also writes a regular commentary at the Rutherford blog, which I will, of course, link in the show notes for this conversation that I've had the opportunity to mention a few times in the past. But I'm glad that we have him here today to talk in person about a couple of his most recent commentaries, which I think were just too good to pass up. One is The Age of Authoritarianism, Government of the Politicians, by the Military, for the Corporations, and Reality Check, No Matter Who Wins the White House, the New Boss Will Be the Same as the Old Boss. John W. Whitehead, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, let's get into this, and I think we'll just jump straight into it without too much introduction to your own background. I think we'll get into that and the Rutherford Institute after the meat and potatoes. But I wanted to jump straight into this because it is such a powerful and important piece of writing here. Both of these pieces, I think, work together as a whole to paint a very vivid picture, which I think will not be so strange to most of my audience, but I think we should go over some of its features. For example, starting with The Age of Authoritarianism, you write, America is at a crossroads. History may show that from this point forward, we will have left behind any semblance of constitutional government and entered into a militaristic state where all citizens are suspects and security trumps freedom. And that it ends up in a very, very powerful place where you say the only distinction that matters anymore is where you stand in the American police state. In other words, you're either part of the problem or part of the solution. A very, very interesting and stark statement there. Tell us about how you came to decide to write on this topic specifically. What caught your attention in the American political sphere right now that galvanized this opinion?
Well, you know, I've been studying the development of America in terms of freedoms over the last 35, 36, 37 years, and it's been a progressive, if you don't use the word train, the train left the station a long time ago on freedom. And what I mean by that is just the amount of data that's collected on American citizens, how the police, not only the police, but federal agencies now are armed. The fact that up to 500 innocent citizens are shot each year by police, which is, if you go to other countries around the world, it's staggering when you find out in some countries the police don't shoot anybody, basically. In this country, we have that problem on a daily basis. You have the National Security Agency, which has not been reeled in at all by the American government. They download almost 2 billion emails a day, our text messages, our Facebook posts. The post office, most people don't realize this, they record at least 160 billion pieces of mail annually. They photograph everything, open some mail to see what people are doing. So in this country, in America, you're totally watched all the time. We live in an absolute surveillance state. You have the police armed with what they call stingray devices in their cars in this country, which are given to them free by the federal government, which can drive by your home. They act as fake cell phone towers. They download your phone calls, your position, your laptop information. The FBI got caught. They now admit it, that they're flying over America with its so-called private airplane, Cessnas, out of the 7 major airports with what they call dirt boxes, which operate the same way as the stingray devices and police cars. They act as fake cell phone towers, gathering all the information. When you go into most large cities today, they have what they call real-time crime centers, which track wherever you go, where you stop, where you shop, what you do. So everything that George Orwell wrote about, Philip K. Dick, and I highlight all this in my book, Battlefield America, the people who wrote about the future is here now. I'm trying to wake people up. And the future is always here. There have been some great writers in the past who have said this. When you're discussing a topic, when it's openly being debated in society, do we live in a police state? People are talking about that all the time. You live in it, because by the time that people wake up, especially the way the modern media operates today, by filtering information, it's not what you see on the news, it's what you don't see on the news. I mean, when I talk to journalists, by the way, Jim, and I say there are over 80,000 SWAT team raids occurring in America annually, 80,000 up from 3,000 in the 1980s, they look at me like, what? They don't report any of that. And, you know, as I show in my book, Battlefield America, Americans are getting blown away. Americans who have done nothing in their homes, these guys crashing through the door at night, armed police shooting people. So those kind of things, when I see the facts, and those are absolute facts, it's enough to make you question where you live.
It certainly is, and you paint a very vivid picture of that in this editorial where you talk about, I like the way that you break down the government into its constituent components, not just the executive, legislative, and judicial that everyone is taught in grade school, but also the shadow government, law enforcement, a suspect surveillance society, military empire. There are so many different aspects to this that all impinge on whatever is left of American freedom or the semblance of liberty. And I think this culminates in a very interesting couple of paragraphs where you point out that there are essentially four camps of people left in the United States. You say in the first camp are those who trust the government to do the right thing, despite the government's repeated failures in that department. In the second camp are those who not only don't trust the government, but think the government is out to get them. In the third camp are those who see the government neither as an angel nor a devil, but merely as an entity that needs to be controlled, or as Thomas Jefferson phrased it, bound down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Then there's the fourth camp, comprised of individuals who pay little to no attention to the workings of government, so much so that they barely vote, let alone know who's in office. Easily entertained, easily distracted, easily led, these are the ones who make the government's job far easier than it should be. Now, it seems to me from those couple of paragraphs that you're laying the majority of the problem at the doorstep of that fourth camp, but perhaps you can elaborate on that.
It's the fourth camp. Most Americans have no idea what's going on. Like I say, when I talk to seasoned journalists and I point out what the NSA is doing, when I tell them that, and see, again, it's not reported. The government has secret underground bases across the United States. That Washington Post finally broke a story. It's called Mount Weather. It's up in Northern Virginia. It's like a shopping mall, but it's underground. It's where the elite, when 9/11 happened, as the Washington Post wrote, the limousines lined up outside of Mount Weather, people escaping underground, was staggering, but they don't tell. See, it's secret. They don't tell us things. They don't have a place where we can go hide, the average citizen, if there's an economic disaster, if there's an environmental disaster or terrorist attack. The government is prepared. In 2014, Princeton University, in conjunction with some other universities, issued a report. It was detailed. I advise people to go read it who live in this country. They did a study of two decades of policies, legislation passed in Washington, D.C., and the conclusion they came to, these are the professors, was that we live in an oligarchy controlled, what they said, by an economic money elite, that the average American has virtually no impact on the government. So when you get elections today and people are voting whatsoever, we're being told by the people who have studied the thing that voting doesn't really work anymore in terms of influencing policy. So we live in a government, in my opinion, that doesn't seem to care about the average American. You can be arrested. We have all these cases. I mean, it's estimated the average American violates up to three laws a day in this country. They don't know it, with all the felonies, federally, local. We get to cases where a veteran, by the way, from Afghanistan, is growing a vegetable garden. It's illegal to do so in his backyard. The police come and shut it down. And so people are getting arrested. One guy spent 3 weeks in jail in Texas for overgrown grass in his yard. It was against the law to have grass over a couple inches high. That's what we're seeing in this country, but you have to pay attention. But as I write, most Americans, when I say, here are the facts, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, by the way. This is all backed up by Washington Post, or they don't know what's going on. And that's the problem. As Jefferson, all the great early Americans said, Washington, Madison, who wrote the Bill of Rights, by the way, said the way to keep free government is by a knowledgeable citizenry that's there. And as James Madison said, take alarm at the first experiment with liberties. And we haven't done that. So this country, according to the government itself, could lock down at any moment.
Well, I would just say that the American government is probably on its 400th experiment with liberty at this point. And yeah, there's still very little.
4,000.
Yeah, 4 millionth. Unfortunately. And this, I think, ties into the second part of this two-part commentary, reality check, no matter who wins the White House, the new boss will be the same as the old boss. And I think it is an important reality check for a lot of people who get so caught up, so emotionally invested in the presidential circus that comes around every 4 years, as if the change from Bush to Obama, for example, changed anything fundamentally about the system. But every time
people kept up with Obama, he was against everything Bush supposedly did. Military, he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And last year, America dropped over 23,000 bombs in the Middle East. This is by the president who won the Nobel Peace Prize. So looking at Obama, no, it got worse under Obama. In fact, Seymour Hersh, the great commentator and writer, 1 year after Obama was in office in 2001, he wrote a piece that said the president is in the hip pocket of the military-industrial complex. It blew his mind. But if you look at the candidates running today, probably the two leading candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they're zillionaires. So the average citizen no longer, in my opinion, can be president. It takes so much money to run for president. So who are we electing? As the Princeton University study showed, we're electing one of the moneyed elite. And who do they protect? Do they protect the average citizen? No. They're protecting the people with money, obviously.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that is one of the fundamental points that I consistently make, and I don't think it should be particularly surprising to my audience. But then again, I am an anarchist, so I truly don't think that there should be government. So that's an easy call for me to make.
My opinion is, if you have government, it should be extremely, extremely limited. But the problem with government, and you know the history, Jim, wherever government's established, you know, it always gets out of control. And you mentioned the word anarchist. I tell people to read Leo Tolstoy, who influenced Gandhi and all that people. He was an anarchist. He basically said at the end of his life, this is the great writer in Russia. He walked off. He said, I'm not supporting any more governments, because they not only pollute everything they touch, but they pollute the people as well.
Right, yes. And anarchism is usually called utopian by a lot of people, but I think it's the idea of limited government that's the utopian vision, because it has never, ever been limited. It's never been restrained. So I guess the real question then is, well, what do you advocate positively here? Certainly, it seems more engagement is necessary, but what form should that engagement take to actually bear fruit?
Well, as I show in my book, Battlefield America, I have 3 chapters on what people can do, and I go through a lot of solutions, but it's going to take activism at the local level in America, because you can change things. The 10th Amendment to our Constitution allows local bodies, states, to nullify legislation or acts by the federal government. They can do that, but very few people do that. The most successful people I've seen, from Gandhi up through Martin Luther King, I talk about Martin Luther King's tactics. He said in an article written that got published after he was shot in the head, he said very clearly that it was time. He was going to shut Washington down. He was going to set up a tent city, and they were going to do protests. He understood that the only way you can move government, he says, we need nonviolent militant. This is the word, militant nonviolent activity of the First Amendment kind. And people have to be, if you really believe in freedom these days, you're going to have to get out in front of City Hall. You're going to go down to City Hall. You're going to have to oppose government. You're going to have to run for government. And these are average citizens. I'm not talking about people with their billfolds full of money. I'm talking about your average citizen, because the government that was written originally, the average citizen was at the center of it. Remember those 3 beautiful words the Constitution starts with: we the people, we are the government, if you want to use that term. Those people supposedly in D.C., Obama, the local police, or whoever we're dealing with, those guys crashing through the doors at night, they're supposed to be working for us. But look, folks, they forgot who they work for. We're the masters, not the slaves.
Well, everyone his own master, I think most anarchists would argue. But I certainly agree with the sentiment, and I hope people will check out these commentaries in particular. We can't really do justice to them in a conversation like this, but they have a lot of very pertinent facts and information in there, and I think make an extremely important point as people once again get suckered into a new round of Hope and Change 2016 edition, where they think the presidential circus is going to solve any of their problems. So I hope people will check out these commentaries. Again, I'll link them in the show notes. But I must admit, I have found your commentaries extremely insightful and very to the point. I like the way they're written. I like the facts and ideas they contain. But I must admit with embarrassment that it is only recently that I have encountered them. For some reason or another, you have not been on my radar before now. So since you're new to myself and probably a lot of my listeners, why don't you talk a little bit about your background and how you came to found the Rutherford Institute?
Yeah, I was a young lawyer, and I was working with groups like the ACLU and other national, and the kind of people that were coming to me, the farmers, the poor, they wouldn't represent. So I just started raising money to represent people who were getting arrested for letting their kid walk down the block to the playground. They were getting arrested, to people that were standing on the street corner with sentiments that the so-called other groups didn't like. But I've come to the conclusion, I don't care what people believe in. As long as it's nonviolent, they're on the street corner, they have a right to say it whether I agree with it or not. So basically, poor people, I've defended everybody from veterans that have been snatched up by the police, by the way. And people go to our website at Rutherford.org, Rutherford.org, and see some of the Brandon Robb case. He was a Marine jerk from his home for doing a Facebook post about Obama. He was put in a mental hospital for a week, and we got him out. No one would touch that case, but we actually got him out of the mental hospital, and the judge really shouldn't have been there in the first place. But I found out there's 1.5 million people in America that disappear every year in the mental hospitals. They're called civil commitment. Again, most people don't hear about that. So the kind of, you know, I just wanted to make sure that the average citizen could get their day in court, and that's what the Rutherford Institute's all about.
Well, you have obviously worked with some really interesting cases that I hope we will have the chance to talk about at more length in the future now that we're in touch. So I thank you again for your time. I will direct people once again to Rutherford.org for more of your writings, and also, of course, to your book, Battlefield America, which will also be linked up in the show notes. But I think we'll leave it there for today. John W. Whitehead, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, sir.